All right, welcome all. Thank you for being here this morning. Today I'm going to talk about the study I ran last year, which investigated four soilless substrates and how they affected strawberry production in a glass greenhouse. So just a quick overview. I'll be going over some background information before moving on to the actual commercial trial that I ran. So just a quick intro into substrate strawberry production. It's very common in Europe. It has been widely practiced for the last several decades. And moving strawberry production out of the soil and into a tabletop setting like this, you are able to reduce soil-borne pathogen pressure, in particular with the loss of methyl bromide use. This is important for the strawberry industry. Additionally, working at waist high is much more ergonomic than working in the ground. And we are able to see some reduced water usage as we are able to apply fertigation directly to the root zone through drip irrigation. Moving into more controlled environments, you are able to extend your season past the normal in-ground length. So this is just a quick overview of what we see in the North American strawberry market. So during the summer, as expected, we have huge production in California when their open field production is at its peak. But in moving production into January, February, and November and December, you can take advantage of very high prices represented by this orange line as California open field production is at its minimum level. And then a final positive effect of substrate strawberry production is localized production. So anywhere you have a greenhouse, you can potentially grow strawberries. So there's many different considerations taken into account when you are designing a substrate. First being physical, there's a fine line between having a good air porosity and good water holding capacity within a substrate. There's also chemical considerations such as pH, yeast, electrical conductivity, and cation exchange capacity. And final, economic environmental considerations are sustainability. So having a renewable source of substrate components as well as having the cost of the substrate reflect any increase in production for growers. So all these considerations are important when designing a substrate. Previous substrate studies that have been done, as I said, this has been done for many decades in Europe, but the concept has been justified in North America, but has not been widely implemented. Strawberries have been grown in pure coconut core. This is common in some commercial settings. Pure coconut core can achieve high yields, but it does not perfectly achieve all of the characteristics that I outlined on the last slide. So what we've seen in our lab is that by mixing different components with coconut core, we can achieve even higher yields. And since 2008, around that time, we've been mixing perlite and peat moss with coconut core for our strawberry studies. And as you might have seen on the slide, I'm also investigating what adding arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi to your substrate mixture, how any effect that might have in soilless production. As many of you may know, the mycorrhizal fungi forms a relationship with the root and exchanges water and nutrients for photosynthetic carbon. AMF, the arbuscular type, is the most common and has been long been known to associate with strawberries. And there has been some soilless studies done with adding AMF to substrate, but has mostly seen increased growth and yield under stress conditions. So the objectives of this study were to evaluate two commercial substrates versus two laboratory mixtures and how they affected fruit yield, fruit quality, and overall vegetative vigor. The secondary objective was to determine any effect of supplemental arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi on the same yield, quality, and vegetative vigor measurements. So a quick timeline of the experiment. We did start with Albion plug plants, grew them up to this sort of tray plant stage you'll see on the right. They were planted at the end of October, right at 5 weeks later, we saw our first harvest and then had five full months of harvest before the final measurements were taken. So this is in this table you can see a description of the different substrate treatments, broken down by component, components and different physical and chemical measurements. So some things I'd like to point out are the two commercial substrates and the standard strawberry mixture with mycorrhizae did have the AMF added, and the two commercial mixtures did have a biofungicide bacteria, as well as starter nutrient and a crushed lime added. You can see that the pH was quite high in the commercial too, and this was due to the company adding too much lime that has been fixed for future studies. And a reason you might see this very high air porosity in the commercial too is due to the fact that commercial too was grown in this white slab bag that is a very shallow root base. So high air porosity is needed in order to ensure adequate drainage of the substrate. The other three substrates were grown in this meter-long trough. So quick experimental design. We did randomize the four treatments across three blocks in the greenhouse to account for environmental variability across the greenhouse. Growing conditions, it was a north-south ridged glass greenhouse in Columbus, Ohio, with phantom pad cooling and hot water radiant heating, and they were also grown on these white metal raised gutters. So looking at temperature, we did break down our temperature regime based on the different light conditions. So under dark conditions, we had our lowest temperature, followed by pure supplemental lighting with slightly elevated temperatures, and the highest temperature during day, which is a combination of supplemental and natural lighting. For light, we did have a 16-hour photo period, and this was a dynamic start time based on sunset. And so across from October through the end of April, we did have an average DLI of right at 18 per day, and this was from natural and supplemental lighting. We had a white LED supplemental lighting overhead, and the average PPFD from the supplemental lighting was right at 200 micromoles. And if you're curious, the spectrum for the supplemental lighting can be found on the right. In terms of irrigation, as you might remember from that table, the physical and chemical characteristics of the four substrates were very different. So controlling root zone chemical controlling root zone pH was quite difficult just because of the increased lime and the different water holding and air holding capacity that we saw. So sunlight was very controlled a lot of the pH. And so it was hard to maintain them all in a close range, but we did do a better job with controlling the electrical conductivity. In terms of the amount of irrigation applied, at the beginning of the experiment, they received about 6 irrigation runs, and the plants were small. And then throughout the course of the experiment, as the plants got larger and sunlight started to come back in the spring, we increased our irrigation runs. And those were right at around 33 milliliters per irrigation run per plant. So each plant throughout the study received between 200 and right at 430 milliliters of irrigation a day. Moving into some results, what we can see here is that the two commercial substrates, after 14 weeks in tree bands, had a very high root zone development, and this was followed by this laboratory mixture with mycorrhizae, and the lowest amount of root zone development we saw was in the laboratory mixture without any mycorrhizae added. This is a final petiole length, so throughout the course of the experiment, we did see that both of the commercial substrates had significantly higher petiole lengths at the end of the experiment when compared to the two laboratory mixtures. This is a table representing the cumulative fruit biomass per plant. So this is broken down by month and then a total over here. So the two commercial substrates had significantly higher fruit biomass throughout the entire study when compared to this laboratory mixture without any mycorrhizae added. So again, this graph represents the total fruit biomass throughout the course of the experiment. And this graph represents the percent unmarketable fruit mass based on these measurements here. So we saw decreased unmarketable fruit percentage in the commercial 2, in addition to having the second highest overall fruit biomass yield. Moving on, so again, this is the same percentage measurement of unmarketable fruit. And then this breaks down, based on this total unmarketable fruit percentage, what percentage was due to having an underweight fruit. So the other factors for unmarketable fruit were mostly due to cultural practices, or they could be potentially fixed with perfect cultural practices. But the underweight fruit percentage is really a better representation of plant performance. So having a low underweight fruit percentage indicates a lower need, less of a need to have labor taking care of the fruits on your plant. Again, this is just the same table summarizing the different substrates that were investigated. And one point that I'd like to make that these substrates are very different, so making a conclusion based on any single characteristic is hard. But we did see some very good results from the commercial substrates. So we did see increased yield, and this was mostly in that fruit biomass, with the two commercial substrates significantly outperforming the standard mix. Commercial 2 did have a lower unmarketable fruit percentage than either commercial 1 or the standard mix with mycorrhizae. We did see the lowest underweight fruit percentage in the commercial 2, and the commercially formulated substrates had an increased vegetative vigor. And this was measured with the final petiole length being significantly longer in commercial 1 and commercial 2 when compared to the standard mix without any mycorrhizae. So moving on to the microbial side, we did have AMF colonization was not found in either commercial 1 or commercial 2, so we weren't able to assess or attribute any of these increased biomass or vegetative vigor to AMF colonization in the commercial substrates. We did, however, find AMF colonization in the laboratory mix with mycorrhizae. And so while we didn't have a high statistical significance with any fruit biomass differences, we did see a pretty convincing trend that the AMF did lead to higher fruit biomass. However, there was no real indication that the mycorrhizae increased vegetative vigor in the laboratory mixture. So moving on, as I said before, this was a commercial trial with multiple different variables, so it is difficult to attribute any single characteristic as to why we saw differences in yield or vigor. But I think this study highlights the importance of integrating many different properties into substrate design in order to maximize soilless production. So just a very quick economic analysis. The average greenhouse strawberry producer, from what we found, spends around 7% of their costs on substrate. However, we found that by potentially increasing your substrate cost to a commercial mix, you could increase your fruit biomass under our conditions from anywhere from 18 to 27%. So increasing the amount of money you spend on substrate could potentially be a way to increase revenue for growers. So at this time, I'd like to thank several people. So in particular, Dr. Kubota and Mark Krogel for helping make these experiments happen, as well as other members of our lab and our primary sponsor, which was Premier Tech. So we didn't attribute or look at any, in particular, any water availability and how it related to petiole length. We tried to equalize our water availability based on drainage percentage. So I guess what I would say is we didn't find anything that suggested from our measurements, but it's also something we didn't really investigate either.
So in your substrate, you have big differences of air porosity. Mm-hmm. How do you define air porosity? Because I thought it's normally between 70 and 90%.
So those measurements were taken by the Premier Tech company, and from what I've understood, from what they told me, is they do a bottom wetting procedure of the substrate, and then they allow it to dry out, and then based on the difference between, they take bulk density and pore density into account and create a percentage, like a ratio of the amount of water uptaken from a bottom wetting procedure. And then at different potentials, they measure the rate of drainage and equate that to an air porosity. So something that I wish I had more knowledge on, but it's not an experiment that we did. And that's exactly why we think potentially there was no colonization in the commercial mixtures. They came with a starter nutrient. So the root zone was already charged with nutrient before even applying fertigation. Additionally, we don't know how long the commercial mixture has been in storage, so that is something that a pre-mixed inoculum might not be viable in a commercial mixture. But within our laboratory mixture, we applied it as a drench. So it was a much more recent application of mycorrhizae. So that's kind of why we think we didn't see any mycorrhizae colonization.